Blog Talk Radio.
very far over many lands and seas. He was very shy, and there was so much sadness in his eyes. But very wise, so wise was he.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
You're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, yours.
me wanna shout hallelujah, and I wanna sing along. Every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring, ring with the harmony. Oh, let it be. Let our rejoice and rise high. Loud as the orgia.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our home ownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sang.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as $20 a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
What's going on, everybody? It is Wednesday. What's going on Wednesday? Can I get a witness? Do anybody know Jesus? But I ain't going to go that route. I ain't going to even put it on that level. We're going to play a little rebroadcast of conversation with Dorothy Tillman. You know, coffee tea and a conversation with Dorothy Tillman. La 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 la. Say that fast, everybody. And we play, it's broadcast on my show Saturday. She airs it live on VON. You can find it on iHeart, Black Planet. But, you know, you also find it on Blog Talk right here every Saturday. That's where you can find it at, and that's where you should be looking for that. We're going to be playing that, and we're going to be playing the interview from Outside the Lines with Chris Broussard, and we're going to deal with that if you'd like to. So, 347-838-9825. And so, I don't even know if I got everything logged in here. Okay, well, I'm getting everything plugged in, logged in, because, you know, we get everything back from the studio. We're broadcasting live here. Watching, I like it down there. Nice little place. Everything's popping off in our little place we had in there. It was almost 90 degrees in the city, baby. It was hot in the shy, babies. It was hot in the shy. Ooh. I just hope nobody don't die to that. I just hope nobody don't die, da-da-da-da-da-da, tonight. May the Most High be with everybody that's out here enjoying the weather and make sure they can get home safe. Let me go in there and play this cut from Dorothy Tillman and Clerk David Orr, reflecting on the election of the late, great Harold Washington.
Yeah, man, you keep y'all hang on. And my board is lit up, 773-591-1690. Our number is, we are at www.wvon.com. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on Facebook, Twitter, group Facebook, blackplanet.com. So, and you can 773-591-1690. This is Coffee, Tea, and a Conversation with me, Dorothy Wright Tillman, every Saturday from 6 to 8. I got to drop that in there. I was going straight back to the phone. But now I'm going to go to David for about 5 or 10 minutes to talk about his article. And, you know, David Orr was the vice mayor under Harold Washington. Love David, always have loved him. You know, because David was always working hard and him with someone being in fairness, and he was there for Harold, working with Harold and working on behalf of the people. And you know he's been good in the position he's in now, because he has worked hard and tried to do what he could do down there and just really working hard. I'm just proud to be associated with David Orr. David. Okay, David Orr, lock it in.
That's very nice, thank you.
As you know, David, I really enjoyed working with you, and I think that you were there. You can give us perspective. I want to thank you for your article in Liz's paper, your letter that you wrote to the editor about Harold Washington Trailblazers. I think you did an excellent job, and I told the committee, all they got to do is look down what you wrote, and just based off of that, you laid it out. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I, like you, always get concerned about how people look at history.
Yes.
And too often people ignore the real successes of his administration, and partly that's because, you know, people control the present, control the past. They kind of control, they tell young people, for example, how history might have been different. And so it is important what you and others have been doing this month to remember what really happened. And just because there was a political battle, that does not mean that reforms and improvements didn't take place.
Right.
This wasn't just an attractive personality. This was a guy who really wanted change. And in today's climate, you know, there's people in politics that really serve the status quo,
mm-hmm.
and there's those who want to change. And when you realize, when you want to change things, what you go up against. And that's what was kind of missing when people realized when Harold Washington took over. Chicago's always been pretty corrupt. We all know that.
Yeah.
But when he took over, he had to change so much of bureaucracy just to get the minimal things. And he went right to work on improving economic development and trying to find jobs for people, because he knew the real problems then. Because he was serving the average person, not serving, as so many people have, the upper crust, so to speak.
Right. You know, David also said when Harold came in office, I tell people all the time, It wasn't just the black community was locked out, a whole wide, a whole group of people was locked out. So he opened up government for the city of Chicago, because the city of Chicago was really in a lockdown.
Yeah, it was, and it was all simple favoritism. One of the things that I liked about it was we actually had a short period in Chicago. We really had true democracy. People started registering in hundreds of thousands. They voted in higher numbers that we haven't seen since.
Mm-hmm.
They participated, like you said. You and I know it's CDBG. That's the Community Development Block Grants. Prior to Harold's time, all these important people appointed to committees. They'd meet, they'd make recommendations, and the mayors would just totally ignore them, whether it was Old Man Daley or Jane Byrne or those before. Harold came in, that became lively debates. Well, how can we fix this? How can we do that?
Mm-hmm.
The people were listened to. There was real democracy, and it really made a difference.
And the reason the CDBG grants to improve our community, and also this whole infrastructure program came about because of Harold.
And it was a fascinating battle, because remember, it's in many ways kind of like what's going on with our president today and the Republicans saying, I'll do anything to wreck the country if it'll hurt him.
Right.
And at the time, the 29 did not want Harold to have any successes. It was a simple political game. He won in 83. They figured two white guys, well, in this case a white woman, white man, Daley and Byrne, ran against each other. That's why Harold won. So hold off, be pretty vicious, and then we'll take him out 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tried to stop all the policies. Harold knew that we had to have infrastructure, just like today. Government's got to spend.
Right.
It's good to spend it, particularly on projects that help neighborhoods.
But also on those projects that black folks are working, it's sad when you come in our community and the project is going on, you see none of our people on those projects.
Well, that's something that he fought. Yeah, I noticed the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my neighborhood, my wife's always out there looking to see what's on their license plates.
So
a lot of these people from Elk Grove coming in.
Right, 708.
Work in the sewers or program to pick roads and schools and all sorts of things. And the 29 fought him, but he finally put that through. And that was one of the big victories at the time. And it not only got the city moving, but it proved his commitment to fairness and how the goodies were distributed, you know, fairly around the city.
And what about the executive order, limited executive order he signed for contracts that how this percentage had to go to the minority?
Well, that's one of the key things he worked on, because before there had been some talk of this, but what he really said is that there has to be a higher percentage of people who contract with the city that are minority-owned. That could be black, Latino, woman, okay? Cause there's
he said that it should reflect the population of the city.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to move that, but it wasn't just the fact of, like, passing the law, in this case an executive order. It was a bureaucracy that was so deep in there that even when there was policies, the people that made the decisions, a lot of times, even though there was a policy to do this, they kept fighting from the inside all those years to try and prevent that movement from happening. So it made his work double trouble.
Yeah, but he worked hard with those suspended. Even with his boards that he put in place, I remember we had to introduce those ordinances and try to pull the boards that he put in place to get them confirmed, and the Dodiak kept holding his back. But he was able to do a lot of things. But, you know, they used some of the engagement of the people's democracy. It was the first time since I've been in Chicago, I know for the black community, that the black elected officials felt accountable to their constituency, that they were scared to not work on behalf. And it got to be all across the city. But in our community, it was a first.
Yes, and it also, in doing that, it forced accountability, but it also showed what could be done.
Right.
You know, there's lots of elected officials, whether black or white or Latino or whatever, that, you know, don't really serve the public very well, and they don't necessarily want to see real change, the kind of change that you've always fought for.
Mm-hmm.
So the little guy gets represented in government, not just the few. And so even at that time, many of the folks who maybe were a little more traditional, they were forced to come along. They were forced to support these things. And, so it really was a time in which these ideas and improvements in trying to, you know, treat neighborhoods more fairly and to jumpstart the economy, particularly in poor neighborhoods, that was all happening. And many of the aldermen, I think, got excited by it.
Right. You know, when Harold went in, because, you know, Harold came in with the movement. That's what they call it. The movement, the
moment,
the man. Now, you know, before we started our movement, there was no Latino. I always tell folks, we didn't say Hispanic and Latino. The Latino people that was Latino, they had no Latino representation. And remember, the first one was a Stenberg, and then after Stenberg. You remember Stenberg in the 22nd round?
Yes, I do.
Oh, he was something else. And people keep forgetting that Rudy Lozano was running for that seat, and he was murdered. And I don't like to let folks forget Rudy Lozano. He was murdered because he was part of this movement that was sweeping Harold Lee. Garcia, who was his campaign manager, then stepped in after they murdered him. So we got him in. And if you remember, Gutierrez was really losing until Harold came and told us to go over in that war. And he said, look, Tillman, we need that Gutierrez. And we went over there with Slim and Helen, and we took their organization, came in our organization, the third ward, and we touched every black voter in that ward. And that's how Gutierrez won, because of Harold Washington sending us over there.
That's right. That's a very good example of a member. That's going back to 1986, after the majority had passed a racist map as early in the census, like early in 1980s, like they kind of do each year. And it finally went through court, and the courts agreed that the map was racist and unfair.
Right.
And so we had these special elections. And because of, well, Harold's leadership and people like you and thousands of volunteers, I remember being out there myself.
Yes, you were out there.
In those seven wards,
uh-huh.
seven wards up for grabs, and Harold's side won four of the seven, which brought in, you know, Chuy Garcia and Luis Gutierrez.
And Molly Carter.
That's right. So by winning four, remember that
mm-hmm.
the city council set of 29-21 was 25-25, and Harold could actually break ties now. So that was the first time he actually had control, and that was 3 years after he was first elected.
Right, and that lets you know, David, and I might keep you a little while longer to see something that
sure.
some of the people might want to talk to you, but, you know, what that says to me, David, is that, and the clerk, oh, I'm not being disrespectful.
That's correct.
I'm not calling
that's
him
clerk. That's correct,
George. Okay, but by that power, all the power to the people, and if they exercise that power, and they begin, even now, you know, we elect people and they just walk away. Harold showed that you can make a difference. We can make a difference when we elect someone.
That's right. Absolutely.
Right.
It was a remarkable achievement because of that registration. All those people who fought to build the infrastructure, which in this case was people registering and understanding why it could be important, and then going out and voting.
Right.
And then they had the victory, and then they realized, sometimes people don't do that. They go and vote, but then they sit back.
Right.
With Harold, they had the victory, but as soon as he stepped into his first city council meeting and 29 took over, those supporters of Harold realized, hey, we're in for a real battle. We can't sit back now just because
right.
we voted.
Right.
And that was the other part of the democratic process, that people participated. They came out. It was just amazing. In fact, Harold Washington probably did more to educate, you know, a lot of people, particularly African-American community, than anyone I can think of.
Yeah, that
because
is,
they paid attention to the news. They said,
yeah.
Wait a second, what's Fidoliak trying to do to Harold today? We've got to fight that.
Well, one of the things, we had made our community conscious and come alive, and that's one of the bad things about tearing down all these developments across the city, because of the economic, the political empowerment that was in those places. But,
uh-huh.
hey, you know, one other thing, and then I got to play march this power to the people, and I'm going to go to the board.
Okay.
One thing is that we used to get together and at least talk about what we needed to do, and we moved out on those things. We would meet, and we would say, okay, this is what we got to do. I'm not so sure people are doing that anymore, looking at what's best for our communities and meeting and doing that. But we did that. We knew what we had to do, and then we had to fight and support.
That's right. And those were tough meetings, and it ought to be tough meetings.
Right.
You know, like I said, I mean, it really
Oh, yeah, they were tough.
Yeah. What government does, of course, it's so important to me. What government does is so important because, you know, corporations, you know, good ones here and there, but by and large, their job is not to help spread the wealth. Their job is to take the goodies.
Right.
And so it was very important when government steps in, says, how can we best help people? How can we build those jobs, build the infrastructure? And we fought about that stuff and discussed it and fought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we have to remember, Harold was not only the first African-American elected, but, you know, he wanted this change. He was a reformer. He was not going to settle and just say, okay, well, now we'll have a black machine instead of a white machine.
Right. He didn't do the Jane Byrne, but Jane Byrne became a part of the cabal.
That's right. That's right. But that's why it was so difficult for him, because he knew he couldn't really bring progress to the neighborhoods and help people and have the little guy really get something
getting out of government if he didn't change all the structural corruption and inside deals that were going on all the time.
Institutional corruption, he called it.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it was. Unfortunately, we still got a lot of it.
Right. You know, well, one of the things about Harold, with him, when he said, "I stepped on grave," passing the bed, I think he didn't realize this sucker had a stick on there getting from there. So I'm going to play this song, and I'm going to go to the board. What David is talking about, what Marsha and Charlotte talked about, for God's sake, we got to give more power to the people. David and I are talking about right now, power to the people. And that's what we're going to be demonstrating on Monday. You got to come and see. We're going to be really showing. We got footage of Harold. We're going to be showing. It's not just a concert. Marsha's going to do a song and dedicated to Harold. But we're going to be showing a lot of little stuff and have people like David and that committee there. We're going to be talking about trying. I mean, this exemplifies giving more power to the people. David, I'm going to go to some calls and see what the people might have to say, okay?
Okay.
Taylor, how you doing this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I want to say that I will be out there with you also.
Thank you.
Dorothy.
Thank you.
If it wasn't for you, I guess the rest of them going to sleep.
Lord have mercy.
And
you got David.
You know, I was just telling every year we went to DePaul together.
Uh-huh.
That I got on Facebook. And, honey, it was tickling me. Some of the people, I'm glad I didn't put my picture there. Some of the people I could see that just, they want everything, all kind of issues
uh-huh.
to divert us from being black. They're so afraid.
Well, one thing Harold said, Taylor, was to be black and to love your people don't mean you have to hate anybody else.
Exactly.
But you can't love nobody if you don't love yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I want to deal with issues that's dealing with us.
Okay, well, then we got to do that. I'll see you Monday, Taylor.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Harold always said it, and David, you can't. To love black people don't mean you hate anybody else.
That's right. If you believe in a fairness or equality, then you support everybody.
Right. Charles, how you doing?
Good morning,
Charles. Yes, you want to talk to David or?
Yes, I will. Good morning to you and Miss Dorothy.
Good morning.
I love you. I love you tonight.
I love you,
I will be there with the Harold Washington movement. He was the godfather of the city of Chicago. I love that man to life, and I love him, and he will always be in my heart as well as my family heart and everyone else that I know.
Okay,
and
thanks.
And also, I would like to say, don't forget Ronald Reagan. Let's pray for his soul, burn in hell, and enjoy your day. Goodbye.
I'm not going to respond to that last part. Dave, if you want to say something, you can.
Well, I think when people are always trying to resurrect history, you just mentioned Ronald Reagan, as people should remember, this is the guy who was extremely antagonistic toward black people throughout the entire administration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always forgotten, unfortunately, when people write the history. So it's important that people remember. He not only was a very conservative guy, but he also was very anti-black.
And now I was in the Congress before he came, and that was one of the fights. That was one of his dilemma about accepting running for mayor, that he didn't know whether to come and run for mayor or stay there and fight the evils of Ronald Reagan.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much, Charles. Michael.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, when I woke up this morning, I'm on my way to work, and I heard the conversation. I said, I got to call in. I remember the names such as people like Bill Ware, Betsy Berry, William B., L. Rady. You know, I worked under Zenobia Black in the volunteer coordinating office in the Maddox building under Harold Washington. I was a staff, but I was, you know, I was a volunteer.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, Al Raven,
but let's talk
through Al Raven was campaign manager.
Yes, he was. I remember you in that leather coat when you were coming down there to get your money from Hope Mueller and the gang. Yeah, remember when you were running and they were supposed to be helping you to run? And see, what people don't realize, they romanticize about Harold Washington's campaign, but Harold was broke before the primary.
You're absolutely right about Harold being broke for the primary. In fact, the Paranequalizers of Chicago, we had an office on Van Buren right next to Runny Steakhouse. And Harold could not get an office downtown for the primary. And that was one of the reasons the Paranequalizers, more or less, we kind of broke up because most of the Paranequalizers wanted Harold to have it, and then some wanted to keep on with our struggle. But we had to get the Paranequalizers' office up to Harold to run his primary so he could have an office downtown. And most folks don't realize
that. Exactly. We were in the Modoc building. It was three campaigns in the Modoc building. Vigoliak, I remember them doing sweeps in our office because of all of the craziness that they were doing to us. I remember thousands of people who were jailed the night before the primary.
Right, if Jane Byrne was taking people up off of the street and putting them in jail, stopping the trains and running.
I remember that. I was a young man. I remember Joe Carter, who did the logistics for the transportation for Election Day and what happened to him. So,
It wasn't easy, Michael. It was such that we all had to get together and work.
Our freedom ain't never been free. And you asked the question in terms of the issue for your subject matter, and you ask what was it we need to do. I think that what we need to do is to do the type of education that we did back then. See, then a lot of people don't even remember. The fact of the matter is, hell did not have the established church, black church leadership.
No, it was all with Jane Byrne.
Yeah, it was all with Jane Byrne. But it was people who were tired of being underemployed or unemployed, who were tired of bad food, who were tired of police brutality, who were tired of all of the isms that kept us from being one city. And quite frankly, we have not been the same since.
Thank you. Let me let David. Thank you. David, you want to respond to that?
Michael's very articulate. He just pointed out what Harold had it going against him, including, like you say, not only the old machine and all the power structure, lack of funds, but you add to it, in many cases, many of the leadership, particularly the black community around churches.
Right.
A lot of times when people are trying to serve the constituents that have very little, they're attempting to go with those who have power. And because they're afraid that if they go against the power, that then they will get discriminated against, which they unfortunately will.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to build a whole new, broader movement, and education is critical. People have to understand it can be done again if people do it right and not settle for the crumbs.
Right. Because, you know, during that time, Jane Byrne was giving people hams and checks, some of the so-called progressive ones. That Jane Byrne was giving these churches in the black community hams and money and churches. And what happened, this is really funny, Dave, it's so good talking to you, is that the parishioners stopped putting money in the basket. The churches began to see an empty basket.
They took things in their own hands, which they needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, all that power we talked about, you know, it was in the administration's hands. This was Jane Byrne as mayor.
Right.
So there's a lot that you can give, like I say, little goodies and little grants and so forth to maybe help the church and help the local school or help the daycare. But unfortunately, a lot of people in power use that to force leaders to go along with the status quo, which might give a little bit to their church but doesn't help the real community.
Right. And that's, you know, David, interesting. We have a really, in our community, I tell folks all the time, poverty and violence, someone is making money off of that.
Absolutely.
And that's why they want to push the negative about that rather than trying to solve the problem because you've got a handful. But those people took that money instead of putting it in the basket of the churches and brought it to Harold Washington campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I want to say in talking about the money, it's very important to say this. People say, we have all these art stores out our community. Well, those that's not doing right, any store should be gone. But I remember that the Swices, I remember this, from 43rd up to 55th Street and Tatros on State Street, they came together. When we were really down with some, we were needing to print some money so bad, we couldn't even get money from black, some of our own businesses who were scared to do something. They put together a bag of money because I went with Jackie Gibson and delivered that money to Jackie so that we could keep going. Had it not been for the Swices from 43rd, they were from 43rd all the way down to 55th Street up under the L. And how they had a little, they had a dinner and Tatro and all of them, and they raised money for Harold. And that's without caring about character, rather than you can't just take a broad brush and paint people. They said, we want them out of our community. I said, well, if some of them had not been here when Harold was running, we might not have got a black man.
That's absolutely right.
You know, well, let me talk to Ms. Johnson. Ms. Johnson, how you doing?
Wonderful, Ms. Tillman. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I haven't called you in quite a while. But I always listen, you know, to your show.
Yes, ma'am.
And I just want to say to you that I didn't know that was your daughter. So we just had a nice
time. Oh, you mean my producer, Ebony Tillman. Ebony Tillman. Yeah, that's my other. That's my oldest daughter.
Right, right. I know I have heard Carmelita, you know.
Carmelita.
Right.
Well, you know, Ms. Johnson, Ebony is the one that... I tell her, Ebony is the one that did all my research in Congress for the whole reparations and all the other stuff. She's my researcher, my writer, very brilliant little girl. Y'all
oh,
know
yes.
Uh-huh.
I just enjoyed talking to her so much.
Okay.
And I just want to give you a compliment on what a nice family you have.
Thank you.
And, you know, and I want to say to you that you're doing a great job, Ms. Tillman.
Thank you.
So, you know, I just want to say these words, you know, for consolation. We just have to, the ones who believe in the right thing, we just have to do the best that we can and leave the rest to the higher power.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
And he will take care of things, you know, in his own time, okay?
Okay, you know what he say? What they said, faith without work is what?
Is dead.
That's right. We got to work. Thank you, Michelle.
And you know, what he says is true. Do you see, I know, you know, that you got to notice it and everybody else should notice it. Do you see how that God is letting people know that he is tired of their wrongdoing?
Well, let me tell you something. My board is lit up and I need to go on, but just know that God said, the Bible said, faith without work is useless. So we got to work.
That's right.
And we got to work and go out in his name and work, and we can change things. Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Oh, okay, dear. So may God bless you.
God bless you, too. One of the things is that, David, is that within our culture, and sometimes the power that our leadership have over people, they said, don't worry. God's going to work it out. Just sit by and wait. Maybe be sitting all day long and the wall won't even get painted. And they never go to the part about without the work.
That's
you got to work. I mean, you want change. Change come because you work, and we did work. One of the other things you talked about in this article, David, I love this article. Your wife told me, your staff person told me that they cut the article up, and I sure want to get the whole article because I'm going to put it on my, if you can email it to me, I want to put it on my website. I have a huge website.
I think we had 14 versions. You know, we'd write this, we'd add this, we'd take this out. But you have to keep it short. There's so much more you'd like to do, but for a little newspaper thing, we have to cut a lot out.
Well, for this one right here, this version, I got to figure out how I'm going to put it on my website because I have a huge web. I have a huge network out there. I have an international network, really, so I want to make sure.
It's a good way to do it nowadays because, the main media doesn't always cover these kinds of things, so people can do their own stuff. That's good.
Right, and I want you to know, David, that we appreciate you. Because you have been consistent, you have not wavered, you have been on the case, you have stayed consistent from the day that I met you and we began to fight for change. Even as clerk, you have been very fair and consistent. You have not allowed the environment to change you and that you are not a chameleon, and we thank you for that. I just want to say that.
Well, thanks a lot. It's really not hard if you're... if you know what your focus is. If your focus is trying a good job for the people and not looking to enrich yourself, then it's really not so hard to be steady.
Hold on, let me get Reverend Weatherspoon. Reverend,
Reverend Weatherspoon, what about these preachers right here selling us out?
Oh, yeah. It's sad. That's the problem we have. We can't get them to come to God and come to the business because they're selling out.
Well, we got to get on the case there, Reverend Weatherspoon.
Yeah, keep praying, keep working. The vision of how Washington set before them, we'll make a difference in the city.
Yes, how's it going on that west side over there, Reverend Weatherspoon?
Well, we're trying to maintain and hold down over here because there's a lot of work to be done over here, but we definitely need to leave over here, get people over there, Danny Davis, Chairman Danny Davis. We got to get people over here.
Okay, thank you, Reverend Weatherspoon. You got anything else? Because I got to go to the next caller. He's gone. Good. Okay, thank you. Sabrina. Sabrina?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, how you doing? I saw the Facebook post, and I had just mentioned that my fondest memory of Hale Washington was the late activist Marion Stamps.
Yes, my sister.
When I worked for her as a teenager, she gave me my first job, first of all, but she took a group of us to see him and how he was just so easily and treatable and, you know, so up close and personal.
Yes.
And, you know, what baffles me, and I'm still angry to this day, is that, you know, his death was never investigated the way it should. Something was just, you know, swept under the rug. But that was my fondest memory of him, that he was easy to talk to, he was real personable, and how nowadays, you know, these politicians are like rock stars. You know, you can't touch them with a 10-foot pole, and to me, you know, they don't do anything but, you know, for those, you know, in their inner circle.
Well, I say this, Sabrina. I tell all elected officials, and I tell people, if I can run up on you and I'm running, I should run up on you and run a million.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Sabrina.
Okay.
Dave, do you have anything to say about that? Should I go to the next caller?
Yeah, I remember Marion Stamps as a fighter, and Sabrina's right, but sometimes our elected officials are maybe as good as we make them.
Right.
I mean, Harold was an exceptional talent, very bright, et cetera, but again, he couldn't have gotten where he had without that great grassroots registration and voting.
Right.
So it really goes together. You can have great leaders, but sometimes you don't support them, or you can make great leaders by what you do in the streets and what you do to organize.
Right. You know, one thing about the registration people forget is that when we put together POWER with Nancy Jefferson, Sim Coleman, myself, and all of us,
mm-hmm.
and we went and we, what was it, Chairman Lavelle. You remember Lavelle?
Yes, sir.
We went and we wanted to get to register people at the welfare office, the currency exchange, and we wanted to register people at the, when you get your driving license, and he gave us a hard time. And so we were able to negotiate with him, well, just let us just do welfare office. And this was before deputy registration was going on. And he put all of these things. Yeah, you got to have a van, you got to have a table, you got to have chairs. I said, oh, Mr. Lavelle, we can't. That's really rough. We need your plan. I went that soon. He said, well, if you can't do that, you can't have. We'll start out in the welfare office. And we were responsible for the one on Rich Street. And all over the city, we began to register people. And they saw that it was getting so successful, they came around and tried to shut us down. Now, Jane Byrne got really mad. She blamed Chairman Lavelle for allowing for her loss because of that. And then later on, we got Come Alive October 5 by Mr. Gardner, and all of that was the People's Movement.
Well, it's a good example, too, because people need to understand POWER, and like I say, they paid much more attention when Harold was alive. But everything, you're now referring to the chairman of the Board of Elections, that everything people tried to do to bring about change, there was an obstacle.
Right.
Making it harder to register. Okay. And so that had to be overcome even before you were able to do all that. So that's why, unfortunately, some people give up because there's so many impediments when you try and bring about change. And in the Latino movement in the last 20, 30 years, you know, for a while in certain places, you know, they were arresting people for registering to vote, just like the Old South. But gradually people overcome those hurdles, and then they can make some real progress.
Or they kill people like they did Rudy Lozano. What you doing over there in that movement? I always remember how they murdered Rudy Lozano because he was very strong. He had a very strong position and understood that coalition, and he was working hard. And they shot this man in the presence of his children. We should not forget that. I don't ever like to forget Rudy Lozano.
Right, because he was a very articulate young leader with a great future, and unfortunately, we never got to see it. So
he murdered with being nice, let someone come in and use the bathroom. They set him up. Corey, you want to talk to Clerk Orr? Corey?
Yeah, good morning.
Remap fight then and now?
Yeah, I just want to ask you a question about the war remap. The one that Emmanuel's trying to stop and everything. I just want to ask your opinion about that. What do you think about that?
Baby, you want to answer that?
Okay, since I'm out of the council, I know less. I know that the side bringing the suit argues that by law that aldermen got elected just a couple of years ago to serve a particular district, and therefore they should keep serving that district, whereas I think the present administration has now given the go-ahead for the aldermen to switch to the new district. And that's going to be a legal battle, and I think those who want to change it, Tom Gagin, who's a great lawyer, and he was a good friend of Harold Washington, and he fought for the steelworkers. I think he's the leading lawyer for the League of Women Voters in trying to force all of them to represent the districts they were elected in. So that's the battleground, and let's see where they're see where.
And one other thing they were saying that the numbers are not equal; they just counted.
That's right. How exact do you have to be?
Mm-hmm.
And so both things are coming out. I guess it was a Today's paper yesterday. The main administration saying they want to dismiss it because I think in this case they're saying the League of Women Voters wouldn't have standing. So they go through a lot of technicalities. But that's the two key questions just we said. One, do the numbers really have to be equal or really close to being equal? And secondly, should the aldermen keep representing for a longer time the wards that elected them?
And the difference here is question 5-9 then it was that it took a long time to win that battle. That's how I heard about 25-25, Corey. Thank you so much. Manny, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right, Alderman Tillman.
Yeah,
that's one thing I can agree with you. It seemed like majority of these black pastors were sellouts, and that's what I said on the Matt McGill show. I thought I was polarizing on pastors.
There's a group of progressive pastors who got together and even marched for these schools. So you got some who are fighting just like we had, and you got some who are not. And the question is up to the, just like it's up to us to deal with the political parties. I go to church every Sunday, and I'm always challenging my pastor, so it's up to us to challenge our pastors too to do what's right for the congregation.
Alderman,
yeah.
We need to rise up against this.
Rahm
Emanuel Anderson,
Nico
Alvarez. We need to get Karen
Lewis
in office.
Well, all power belongs to the people. It's up to the people to decide who they want. Thank you, Manny. It's all power. Because, you know, this has just been so wonderful. I've enjoyed you. We got to do this again. We have to, just for political education, just to educate, just to talk to people so they can know and believe that it can happen, what we have to do.
Yes, a little bit, you know, we all want to kind of reflect on that time and whether we're very young or not. At the same time, education is so important, so people don't have this mythical belief. It's kind of like, you know, Martin Luther King, how people, everybody praises him now. Well,
he just had a dream, huh?
The traitor, the FBI was spying on him.
Right.
You got to realize that when you're powerful, popular people that really bring about change, history wants to turn them into, weren't they just regular guys? They weren't for that kind of change.
Right.
You got to remind people if you want change, you got to be tough and you got to fight the existing system. And this wouldn't have happened without the thousands, the tens of thousands of people. That's what's so nice about this month. You remember, he had a great leader in Harold Washington, but there were so many people, from people on the street to people who just called in your show, people in his administration, so many people working together, and that's why I think they made a difference for, unfortunately, too short a time.
And so I'll see you on Monday. I'm going to say you're going to have a little gift you're going to be giving out to people.
Is all right?
I don't know. Tonight, so you might be. Anyway, I'll see you on Monday, David. Thank you,
Dorothy.
Thank you, David. Okay, Courtney. Thank you, David, so much. This has really been a wonderful show. And let me just tell you, Artist Blues Boys White Field is today at the New Faith Baptist Church, 8400 South Hartford, from 10 to noon, 10 to 11 to noon. Is the tune that Artie Blue Boy White Field is today at New Faith Baptist Church. So make sure that those who love blues like I do, that you make sure that you get a next week I'll play some music of Artie Blue Boy White. Once again, the Harold Washington Culture Center on Monday, doors open at 6. The program.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Earth.
Never. can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. One, two, three, hit me. Bop, bop, bop it out of bebop. Bop, bop, yeah, bass man. Come on up. One, two, three, hit me. Sound good. Yeah. Saxophone on the floor. One, two, three, hit it.
Cleaning service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello, this is Prentice L. Allison, founder and president of SPSI, Service Perfect Solutions Incorporated, a network of financial service professionals teaching people how to use life insurance and annuities to retain more of their income and pay the least tax on it. Our toll-free number is 877-902-9048. We are proud to have serviced more than 500 clients, national and international, from ages 0 to 99 for the past 30 years. My tip to you today is, if you are a business owner with at least one employee, including yourself, it would behoove you to get business life insurance. Why? Thank you for asking. 7 points I want to leave with you. Your premiums are tax deductible. Your policy bills cash tax deferred. Your cash reserve inside the policy is yours to use tax free. The policy will replace your income if death occurred prematurely. The company will pay the premiums if you become disabled. The policy will return all premiums to you when you retire. Last but not least, make sure your agent is well experienced in business life insurance. Stay tuned for more tips on how to use life insurance and annuities to help yourself today and protect your family and business tomorrow. This is Prentice L. Allison, president of SPSI. Toll-free number is 877-902-9048. I wish you well, and to God be the glory.
In this, her first romance novel, State of Ecstasy, Jew Ephraim finds passion on the lush island of Martinique. Reminiscent of the works of Klipas and Lawrence, Jew Ephraim's rich emotional landscape delivers an achingly accessible complexity that makes State of Ecstasy steamy, provocative, and fresh, and its author a forceful new voice who brings an entirely new level of heat to romance. With her soon-to-be-released paranormal novel, Ephraim is giving us a brand new insight into this genre. Find her books on Amazon, iTunes, and wherever books are sold.
People have been waiting for a player like this to come out for years. What do you make of today's news?
Well, you know, I think it's great for Jason. First and foremost, you know, this journey of coming out can be difficult for people. And the fact that he has reached this particular point in his life, I'm just really, really happy for him. I'm happy that he has the support that he has. And I'm happy for the fact that the way that he described himself, you know, I am black and I am gay. And I've seen a lot of people kind of joke around with, well, duh, of course you're black. But we also know that there's this thinking that, you know, if there's any community in terms of ethnicity that is hesitant to accept LGBT people, it's the black community. So in stating I am black and I am gay, he's also letting people know that his family accepts and embraces him. The black family that he has accepts and embraces him as well. So to me, he not only took down the final barrier in terms of being an openly gay player, one of the top four sports, but he also once again provided an illustration of the fact that the other stereotype of the black community not accepting gay people is also false.
Well, another community that hasn't been accepting is the professional sports community. And Chris, how ready is the NBA and the locker rooms for having an openly gay teammate?
I think, as Fran said earlier, the climate in society is very set for this thing to happen. I mean, like I said earlier on SportsCenter, you know, a lot of people feel like if you come out and say you don't agree with homosexuality, you are viewed as a bigot, you're viewed as intolerant. So I think that the climate is right for somebody to come out and say they're gay. I've been texting with players, GMs, coaches, agents throughout the day since this news broke, and it's been overwhelmingly supportive of Jason, from former teammates to guys who've played against him. Some have said they hope this spurs other players to come out of the closet. There are a few players, a minority, who have said that they would be a bit uncomfortable with a gay player in terms of being in the shower, in the locker rooms, things like that. But they, you know, said they could accept him as a teammate. No one's, I don't think you'll see anyone come out and be against this, whether it's because of their true feelings or just because of political correctness. But when you see the David Stern statement, the Atlanta Hawks, the Washington Wizards statement, Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash, Baron Davis, many players of that stature have texted me today in support of Jason. For the most part, guys are just going to deal with it and move on.
LZ, Collins wore the number 98 this season as a way of honoring Matthew Shepard, who in 1998 was killed in an infamous anti-gay hate crime. How likely is it that this is a watershed moment and others follow his lead?
You know, first of all, I just want to say, you know, for him to tie that in the way that he did was incredibly powerful and gratifying for me to see. I remember being a young reporter myself, and just recently out in the newsroom, and I was the only gay male in the newsroom at the time when Matthew Shepard was killed, and it had a profound effect on my life. So I'm really happy to see him carry that banner and all the work that Judy Shepard has done to keep Matthew's memories alive. And with that being said, I am sure that right now there is some closeted 11, 12-year-old who likes to play basketball who may or may not think that they have a place in the NBA or in college or even a high school team, that could see Jason's story, read the beautiful piece that he's written, see the support that he's getting from a multitude of people, not just athletes in the athletic community, but politicians as well, like Bill Clinton, as well as Nancy Pelosi, and see that they can find courage and strength in that, and that finally, we can get over trying to cover this story and we can focus again on what's happening on the court and on the fields and not necessarily what's going on in the locker room.
Chris Collins makes this announcement after his season is over, so there'll be months before he signs with a new team. If he does, he is a free agent. How do you think this will affect that?
From talking with people around the league who will make those decisions, they've all said if he's not in the league next year, it's not because he's a homosexual. Jason is 34. We know he played about 9 minutes a game last year. You know, he's one of the lower people on the bench. So some team may not sign him just because they don't think he can help them basketball-wise. Very few will do it because of he's a homosexual. Now, there are a few that said, you know, in a situation where if there's a GM who does think he's got, you know, players in his locker room who may have a problem with it, that and Jason's really only going to be probably a 10th or a 12th man, they may not do it if they think it could cause a problem in their locker room if there's a straight player available who can do for them what Jason does. So it depends on the team, and that's the case with, you know, I've been talking to people all day, and it's a mixed bag of reaction, really just like it is throughout America. There are some who are overwhelmingly supportive, some who are lukewarm, some who are against it, so I just think it's going to depend on the team. But to sign Jason, it only takes one GM and one team.
LZ, what do you think about that?
You know, I agree with, you know, Chris, you know, definitely for the most part. I, too, have been, you know, contacting my sources, talking to players, talking to GMs. I actually was texting one GM who said if he's healthy and can help the team, he would definitely sign him. So those are encouraging words because at the end of the day, it's not the fact that he's come out as a free agent at 34 that's really going to decide where we are in this conversation. It's whether or not he gets re-signed because at that point, he will be an openly gay player in a locker room. Right now, he's an openly gay player in the off season. And so, you know, everything we're talking about is still hypotheticals. What we need in order to understand where we are with this conversation is for him to actually be signed, to have a team say we want him for his skill set, for his veteran leadership, for the fact that he's played on two NBA caliber or NBA championship caliber teams, and we need that for our team, and we don't care about his sexual orientation. That's the move that's actually going to tell us progress. Him coming out is great for us to continue the dialogue, but the sign of progress will be an NBA team signing him for his talent.
Now, there was a lot of positive support all across social media today, but Dolphins wide receiver Mike Wallace tweeted, "All these beautiful women in the world and guys want to mess with other guys. I'm not bashing anybody, don't have anything against anyone. I just don't understand it." He also went on to delete those tweets, but then apologized for offending anyone that he may have offended. LZ, what did you make of Wallace's tweets?
You know, I think we need to allow for some of this conversation to happen. I'm not one that wants to stranglehold a respectable conversation because someone disagrees with me. And in full disclosure, you know, Chris and I have known each other for a long time, and we've had this conversation many, many times. And we're both happen to be on opposite ends of the spectrum on this conversation, but we have the conversation respectfully. And as long as it's respectful, I don't care if someone wanting to know more about the conversation. I think that there is a knee-jerk reaction sometimes that people have, and that as soon as someone doesn't come out in full support, you want to shout down and not hear what a person has to say. I think if we really want to move towards progress and move towards full acceptance, we have to have this conversation and this process. And the conversation really about the locker room, because that seems to be the crux of what everyone is hesitant about. So I think the NBA, as well as the NFL, NHL, and MLB, needs to also have respectful, intelligent conversation about the locker room, and not avoid it or
like
bash the person.
Go ahead, Chris.
But to have that conversation.
I like to second what LZ said, because I'm a Christian. I don't agree with homosexuality. I think it's a sin, as I think all sex outside of marriage between a man and a woman is. And LZ knows that. He and I have played on basketball teams together for several years. We've gone out, had lunch together. We've had good conversations, good laughs together. He knows where I stand, and I know where he stands. I don't, you know, criticize him. He doesn't criticize me and call me a bigot, call me ignorant, call me intolerant. And that's what a lot of I hear, and talking to some people around the league, there are a lot of Christians in the NBA, and they don't want to be, just because they disagree with that lifestyle, they don't want to be viewed and called bigoted and intolerant and things like that. And that's what LZ was getting at. Just like I may tolerate someone whose lifestyle I disagree with, he can tolerate my beliefs, and he disagrees with my beliefs and my lifestyle, but true tolerance and acceptance is being able to handle that as mature adults and not criticize each other and call each other names.
There's a difference, I believe, between tolerance. LZ, is there a difference between tolerance and acceptance, LZ?
Well, absolutely there is. And, I just wanted to say, just for the record, I, too, am a Christian. I don't think that a person's views on sexual orientation is exclusive to one branch or one sort of interpretation of the Bible versus another. I, too, identify as a Christian. And there is a difference between tolerance and acceptance. And there's a difference between name-calling and fact-checking. And I think that what we need now is patience and more intelligent conversation to happen. That there is a point, I believe, in which you can identify someone's behavior or language as being bigoted. And there is a point in which you can identify someone's curiosity as not having all the facts or being misinformed. And I think the only way you can delineate between those two is by having the uncomfortable conversations. Chris and I have had the uncomfortable conversations. The NBA now needs to have those uncomfortable conversations, just as the military did back in 2010 with the overturning of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You're going to have the uncomfortable conversations, but you don't get any movement without some friction. This is going to be a little bit of friction, but the NBA will survive this, just like it has survived integration for race.
Now, Chris, he mentioned in his article, Jason, that he is a Christian as well. So what's your take on that?
Personally, I don't believe that you can live an openly homosexual lifestyle or an openly premarital sex between heterosexuals. If you're openly living that type of lifestyle, then the Bible says you know them by their fruits. It says that, you know, that's a sin. And if you're openly living in unrepentant sin, whatever it may be, not just homosexuality, adultery, fornication, premarital sex between heterosexuals, whatever it may be, I believe that's walking in open rebellion to God and to Jesus Christ. So I would not characterize that person as a Christian, because I don't think the Bible would characterize him as a Christian.
LZ, your response?
Well, my response is that faith, just like love, just like marriage, is personal. And that if you try to use a broad brush to paint everyone's faith, what you really are painting is a world in which it's comfortable for you and not a world in which, in this country, we're allowed various forms of religion. And just because someone doesn't agree with one person's interpretation of the Bible versus the other doesn't mean that they have exclusive rights to dictate what that person, how that person should live. I would love not to have premarital sex, but in this country, I'm not allowed to get married. So I do what a brother needs to do. Now, if you want to have a conversation about the constitutionality of things like the Defense of Marriage Act, we can have that conversation. If you want to talk about the constitutionality of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, we can have that conversation. But we can't say, on one hand, from a spiritual perspective, that the Bible says X, Y, and Z, but then set up a system, a federal government system, in which you further ostracize a collection of people and then point fingers at them and label them sinners because they're not able to fulfill what they want in their heart spiritually. So I think there's a lot of layers in this conversation that needs to be peeled, and to simply say, well, you're having premarital sex, and oh, by the way, I'm not going to let you get married, I think is setting us up to be called sinners, which isn't fair, which isn't what the Bible calls for. It calls for us to love and treat each other as we want to be treated, and I think anyone in our position, in our situation, and by our, I'm speaking to the LGBT community, will be very frustrated with that. But even in the face of all of that, I will tell you that I still follow Jesus Christ. He is my personal Lord and Savior, and I really don't need Chris or anyone else telling me if I'm a Christian, because Jesus tells me I am.
Well, this is certainly a conversation that will continue, and it's good to have this conversation. We appreciate LZ Granderson, Chris Broussard joining us today here on Outside the Lines.
Hour 105.1 is the Breakfast Club. Good morning. Now, yesterday, Charlemagne gave this man Donkey of the Day.
Yes, this Bay's brother on the phone, Chris Broussard.
Chris Broussard, good morning, from ESPN, of course.
What's happening, y'all? How you doing?
So, yeah, first question, Chris. Do you not like homosexuals?
I'm a Christian, but I come across all types of people who are living lifestyles that I may not agree with. Not just homosexuals, and I can get along with, you know, people, come across people like that on an everyday basis. Obviously covering the NBA. I come across various lifestyles. So
you sound like the white guy. You know, the white guy that says, I'm not racist, I got black friends. That's what you just sounded like.
Hey, whatever it sounds like, it's the truth, you know. And I actually, as was on the show, LZ Granderson, he's openly homosexual, openly gay. We have been friends for years. We played ball together, had lunch together, had discussions together about his lifestyle, about my faith. I disagree, but disagree respectfully. So, nah, man, I don't have any problem with homosexuals.
Well, as I said during Donkey today, and as we talked about last night on the phone, Chris, what makes you so perfect? I told you that we're human beings living a spiritual existence. Like, it's impossible for us not to get dirty walking through this thing called life.
Yeah, no, I'm never claimed to be perfect. That's actually why I called you last night and rapped with you. I think you misinterpreted what I was saying. I definitely don't want to come off as that I'm perfect. I'm just striving to be Christ-like. That's all I'm saying. And I think that's the mark of a Christian, that we strive to be Christ-like. All of us fall and stumble, and I have fallen and stumbled many times since I've been a Christian. But I always, you know, repent and ask God for his forgiveness, and, you know, I move on from there. I think that's the mark of a Christian. And I think if a person... That stumbling and falling while you're trying to live for the Lord is different than going out and hunting for sin. No, I'm going out and getting into it tonight. I'm going to be mad if I don't get into any sin. So, well, I'm trying to make you accept my sin. Like, I don't care what God said. I'm just living like this. That's different than a person who's sincerely striving to live the right way and stumbles, legitimately falls. Get back up, get on your path, you're forgiven, and let's keep trying.
What exactly does the Bible say about homosexuality?
It says it's a sin. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9 says fornicators, homosexuals, robbers, thieves, adulterers will not inherit the kingdom of God. And it goes on to list a few other things. Romans chapter 1 says it's unnatural. Obviously, the Old Testament talks about it being wrong. But people, you know, like to say, well, it says that in the Old Testament, Leviticus, but not in the New. But no, the New Testament, Romans and 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and a few other scriptures clearly condemn homosexuality, along with all forms of sexual immorality, which is basically, as the Bible defines it, sex outside of marriage between a man and a woman.
Well, Chris, Deuteronomy 14:8 condemns the eating of pork, but I bet you love bacon.
I sure do, man. But, you know, the Old Testament dietary laws don't apply in the New Covenant. Acts chapter 10, Peter, you know, talks about that as the Lord revealed it to Peter. So all of the Old Testament laws, there's 613 laws in the Old Testament that they had to follow under the Old Covenant. We're under grace. We don't have to follow all of those 613 laws to have peace with God. But the moral covenant, because it's outlined in the New Covenant, the New Testament, as I said, 1 Corinthians 6, Ephesians, Romans, Galatians chapter 5, talk about the New Covenant still following the moral code of the Old Testament. So the moral laws of the Old Testament that we were taught still apply, but not, you know, eating shrimp and lamb blended cloth and fabric and things like that.
So what about those that say, okay, I was born gay, so how can you say that I'm a born sinner? Like, I'm not asking to be sinful. I'm born this way. This is naturally who I am.
That's true.
Well, I mean, first of all, my personal belief is that you aren't born that way. I think scientific studies, you have those on both sides. It's really inconclusive. But regardless, we're all born in sin. I mean, I was born attracted to women. I'm still attracted to women. I'm married 17 years, never cheated on my wife. But, man, I've been tempted. You know what I'm saying? And, I mean, I cover the NBA. I'm seeing beautiful women all the time. I've had actresses throw me a little rhythm, but I got to resist. I got to fight against temptation. And that's the life of a Christian, that you fight against the temptation. And if you stumble and fall, then you get back up, you repent, you ask God for forgiveness, and you move on. And I think that applies to homosexuals as well. If a person who's a same-sex attracted, you know, is sincerely trying to live for the Lord, and they fall, and they fall in the same-sex relationship or act, and they're really trying to serve the Lord, and they repent, and they ask for forgiveness, and they keep trying to serve God, and they fall time and time again consistently, I believe that person is a Christian. But that's why I said yesterday it's about unrepentant sin. There's a difference. Am I repenting, or am I just saying, yo, this is how I am, God, and I don't care what you say. I don't care what your words say. I'm not even asking for forgiveness. But how are you going to be forgiven if you ain't even asking for it?
Well, like I said to you last night, it's like, yo, I can go to church on Sunday. I can pray for forgiveness every time I lay down with a different girl. But what if I keep doing that over and over and over? Does that make me a bad person?
Well, the question is your heart. I mean, and you know that. Are you really trying not to fornicate, not to sleep with that girl over and over again? Because God, the Bible says God is not mocked. God ain't no punk. You ain't no punk, I ain't no punk, none of y'all punk. If I come to you and I say, yo, man, I want to be in covenant with you. I want to be your boy. We cool. But behind your back, I'm going out time and time again and dissing you and dogging you on purpose. But when I see you in your face, I'm like, yo, man, you know, I'm sorry, man, but I don't really mean it. Then you ain't going to go for that once you find out the truth, because you ain't no punk. You ain't mocked. And it's the same thing with God. We created in his image. So if we ain't punks and gonna fall for that, then he certainly ain't gonna go for that. But if I'm your boy and I sincerely mess up, I just happen to do something wrong against you, and you know I'm really sorry, and I'm like, yo, man, my bad. I ain't gonna do it no more, dog. I'm sorry. Then you'll forgive me in many cases, and it's the same with God.
Well, Chris, right. God knows my heart, but he also knows my penis, and he created all of this vagina. And it's kind of hard to resist all this vagina. Just like it's kind of hard to resist all these different fruits. He ain't telling me just to eat apples. He's like, I can have apples, oranges, cantaloupes, watermelons, grapes.
I mean, yo, you ain't no different than me. You ain't no different than people in the Bible. You ain't no different than millions of other cats out here who trying to live for the Lord and are living for the Lord and not going after all these women. The Bible says the body is not created for sexual immorality. It's created for the Lord.
But the Bible also says the flesh is weak.
Our bodies weren't created for that.
Oh, man.
So we actually abusing our bodies when we walk like that. That's why, let's be honest, sex is dangerous outside of God's context of marriage. Now, you got to have safe sex. I ain't got to worry about safe sex. Safe sex is with my wife. You know, but you got to put on condoms and strap on and worry about this and worry about that.
Charlamagne ain't doing that. Charlamagne ain't doing that.
I pray that you don't catch some disease or something, because it is dangerous
We all know that.
I'm wearing condoms. Don't listen to him.
No,
yeah, okay.
So, Chris, what's the moral of the story? What's the thing you really want to convey to the people today?
I just want to convey to the people, man, that, you know, like I said, you start off this interview by saying, why am I perfect? I'm not claiming to be perfect, man. I'm just claiming to be a man that loves the Lord and is trying my best to live for Christ.
Right.
And I believe that's the mark of a Christian. And anyone trying to do that is a sincere Christian. But I got love for y'all, man.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having me on the show. Love the conversation.
Is your job in jeopardy, Chris?
Not that I know of.
Okay. All right. Well, you have a good morning, all right?
All right, y'all. Peace.
All right. Gosh, you almost put me to sleep.
Why, conversation with God put you to sleep?
Nah, but it just seems like he was talking down to people. Seems like he felt like he was better than anybody
else.
Well,
you had the chance to address
him. Like, nah, just said, I've got people that I didn't want to talk to him. That's how I felt.
But he just said, he can't be like that. Anymore.
I could be like that.
He don't feel like he's perfect, you know?
So. I do, but I'm just telling you how it felt like to me.
The Breakfast Club. Power 105.1. Never leave.
Do you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
Walking down the street now is a dangerous thing. There are drug dealers, crack houses, gang members, and crackheads. People fighting, cursing, and killing too. So much chaos, we don't know what to do. But if people only knew that they are hurting little children, if they could only see what our community could be. When in consultation, 1, stay calm. 2, try to say something positive. 3, tell the person what's on your mind. 4, ask if the person understands. 5, thank the person for listening if you can. Come on, y'all, let's be an example. It has to start somewhere. How about now? For more information on ways to prevent violent crimes, contact Totally Positive Productions at 773-488-9553.
Sometimes I get a little I get a little blue. There was a boy, a very strange Janet boy. They say he wandered very far, very far over land. A little shy, and sad, but very wise, and then one day, a magic day he had my way. And while we spoke of many things, this he said to me, the great sometimes I get a little lonely, and sometimes I get a little blue. The greatest thing is just to love, be loved in return.
9825. I see a lot of y'all texting me. I'm chatting in on it, but not a lot wants to talk about it. Let me see if I can take this one call because Eb is not in right now. Sorry, what's the call? Ebony, why are you going to text me on the phone? Listen, Ebony text me in the chat room saying she can't switch the call over here. Okay, well, let me just see if I can grab this one call. I'll be right back in 1 minute.
Yeah.
Lord, it's so hard living this life, a constant struggle each and every day. Some wonder why I'd rather die than to continue living this way. Many are blind and cannot find the truth, cause no one seems to really know. But I won't accept that this is how it's gonna be. Therefore, you got to let me and my people go. Cause I wanna be free, completely free. Lord, won't you please come and save me?
Yeah, yeah, okay. This is Jimmy Lee Underground Radio Network, and we still jamming, okay. I couldn't get that one call. I couldn't get it, but people ringing, knocking at the door, dropping stuff in. So let me go on ahead and say what I was trying to say. Chris Broussard should not get fired for being a Christian. T-Boy ain't got a job, so are they attacking Christians? Maybe. Who knows? But is Christianity the new, religion that no one wants to be in? I mean, right now you got the black churches siding in Chicago on the gay marriage issue. You have some black churches that are in for it. They have the right to. Some black churches are not, which they have the right to. But I didn't think I would be in living at a time where you would put your faith on the line. You see, here's the funny part. Chris Broussard did a good breakdown for those people who do not know the Bible by giving all those chapters and quotes and verses of we can find those things, just not in Leviticus. See, Leviticus for the Old Testament, the Jews, the Israelites, you know, the Old Testament people, the people that follow the law, who don't eat shrimp, you know, and pork and stuff like that. You know, who recognize Sabbath and stuff like that. But we're not going to deal in that because, you know, I ain't trying to get religious on the spot right there. But I know y'all going to blow me up. In my email, you can email your comments and questions at jimmyunderground@gmail.com. We go for that. Tomorrow, will Uwap be there? Will Uwap be there? We should have a Thursday program. Come on, Blog Talk. Give me a Thursday program. You knock me off Thursday every Thursday. What's going on with that? The people want to listen. They want to know what's going on. Where is that cone cut at? What's really happening? For my Thursday new music listeners that's going to be tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the rebroadcast of that Dorothy Tillman and Cook County Clerk David Orr reflecting on the election here in Washington. That was a great history lesson, almost in civics. You see, it goes to show you that you get registered, you get engaged, and you hold your politicians accountable, and then you get the services that you do deserve. You don't become just a figurehead, you know, a nail on a coffin, just a little number, just somebody in the cut. Become a true citizen in democracy. But people take things for granted. Almost that I got even sneeze. Man. I was holding that sneeze in for a minute, and then I moved the mic away, and it went away. And I hope it don't just jump back on this last minute I got. Well, listen, in my last minute, I'm going to try to have my show on tomorrow. I'm broadcasting from Ohio. I'm going to try to have Ape Yard on. Got some new cuts from Jay Shine, Ooh-Wop, MDK, and Montana Black. Y'all should enjoy it. And don't forget Saturday morning, coffee, tea, and a conversation with Dorothy. That's just off the chain. Might be, I don't know what we're going to reflect on. And sometime next week, I will have some members of the Illinois GOP party to discuss the Growth and Opportunity Project that they are having to outreach to African Americans. Americans worldwide, and everyone wants to say, what they do for black, but what they do for black, but why are you a black Republican? You know, hopefully I can get on that board and that committee to ensure that, you know, the urban Republican agenda is looked upon, because you can't forget the urban Republicans out here partying. Okay, this is Jimmy's Underground Radio Network. I'd like to tell everybody, good night, and may your God be with you. And which side are you on? Choose life. Choose God. Love all. See y'all tomorrow, everybody. Oh, Ebony's in. Ebony.
Thank you, Jesus.